You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
We're here at Saucy Brew Works for the Massive Report podcast, but today we are kind of the Massive Report 2 coming off of the first Crew 2 game. We've got a number of fresh faces here as we're rotating guys in, and a veteran to Crew 2, or Crew fans. We'll start with the veteran, Neil Sika. Thanks for joining us, Neil.
It's great to be here. It's my favorite place to be, guys.
Favorite place to be, huh?
Yeah.
We'll take that as
once compliment. Every 2 years, I should preface.
Well, you know, things got complicated.
Good to be back. Good to see you.
Yep. We have three of our newer writers joining us today. First, Grant Miller. Grant, how you doing?
Doing well, Pat. Always happy to come off the bench for you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Caleb DeNorm, did I get that right?
Yeah, you did.
All right,
nailed
Caleb.
It.
Caleb's our youngest new writer. Caleb finishing up middle school. Is that right?
Well, close. I'm getting to the end of my senior year now, so. Making those college decisions that you guys have, you know, probably already made once in your lives.
Yeah, had made for you. and then we've got Theodore, another one, Savinsky. Did it right?
You did. What's up, guys?
Right. Cool. So these are guys that, if you've been paying attention this year, have been writing for us on the website, but new to the podcast. Bart and Brian are out tonight, so we figured bring in some new faces. Obviously, Sam's here. Handling the microphones, and I'm going to do some hosting. But really, we're just going to kind of let things flow, and we'll see how it all goes. It worked a couple weeks ago. No crew game this weekend, so we don't have to start with recapping a game, but there is quite a bit to talk about. We'll start with the Crew 2 game, which I know not everyone here watched, but I imagine people are interested in. Grant, you and I took it in. Interesting, I think, just because these are a lot of young faces, a lot of new guys. As they pointed out multiple times on the broadcast, Miami's team actually played together last year in the USL. So just your takeaways from that first game and maybe any guys that stood out to you.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. I think it was – you can tell this is the first time those guys have played in a competitive environment. I know they had some preseason games together and they've been training. But you can tell, I mean, it's not a coincidence Miami won that game, knowing what we know now. You could definitely tell they want to play the basic crew system, the principles, coming out the back, getting the fullbacks forward. Mo Farsi, who's someone we've kind of talked about, we're very interested in, he was pushing things up on the right side. But beyond that, I think it'll be interesting to watch throughout the year if you're interested in seeing the youth development. I think three academy guys got in there.
Yeah, two started.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you love to see that. That's the whole point. So, now, the products of this we're going to see more down the line. I'm not going to get too bogged down with results by these guys, but it's, you know, if you're like me and don't have much of a social life and it's there on a Saturday, by all means, throw it on. Yeah,
well, and I should have mentioned, Crew 2 lost 2-0 to Miami, but played actually a pretty good first half, really kind of controlled things early on. I think there were some bright spots. I think both of the academy kids were up top. We're offensive players, so you got a young guy who's playing up there, guys that haven't been training with the team as much, given they're with the academy. I want to ask the rest of you guys, though, what is your interest in Crew 2? I mean, there's a lot of buzz about it. When we write about it, these articles get retweeted, and they actually get pretty good views, so there's definitely an interest level. This is obviously the first game. It was streamed online on a Saturday. Now, the first team wasn't playing, but, you know, not the ideal situation, but is this something you guys... Theodore, Caleb, are you interested in it? Are you going to, you know, go with 10 games? I think season tickets are like $55. What's your interest level?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's less about, like, the micro level in the match and what this represents in terms of, like, culture. I think, especially the players, but you want to pivot to, like, from a staff point of view, it's about, like, establishing that there's a pool of candidates to pull from when you're filling out that, like, senior assistant coach staff. So, I don't know. That's what I'm interested in is, like, establishing a culture and establishing, like, your principles of play so that when things go, you know, in a different direction in the future, you have a pool of candidates to pull from. And the country is just so big that, like, people are slipping through the cracks, so you have to cast, like, as wide a net as possible. And so from a macro level, that's where my interest lies in the in Crew 2, I would say.
Caleb, what about you?
Yeah, you know, we look at these past few years with, you know, some of the youth products that came through the crew. You know, we had Zach Steffen, we shipped him out on loan. We had Alex Cornally, we shipped him out on loan. So it's kind of nice. Miguel Berry, we shipped him out on loan. You know, that's working out right now, getting into the first team. But it's nice for us crew fans who stay around Columbus that, you know, we get to see these young guys play, you know, at historic Crew Stadium, hopefully coming up soon. And we'll get to see all of them at home instead of, like, you know, abroad and not being able to see, but then they come back and they're looking good. So it's nice that we're modeling after a lot of the Europe, you know, like I think the big ones like Barcelona B, they're playing in, I think it's the second or third division in Spain. You know, that's a big deal that, you know, they're playing close to home so that the fans can get acclimated with it. And then when they break into the first team, you know, we're familiar with them and they're familiar with us.
And it's a little different. As of now, this is the first year of this MLS Next Pro, and they're still working on things. You did see Brady Scott drop down, one of the backup goalkeepers drop down. He went on loan, as they called it, to Crew 2, which I think is ridiculous that you have to loan a guy to your own team. But the movement's not as fluid as it is over in Europe, and I imagine that will work its way, work itself out. I mean, you see even in baseball, in hockey, in the NBA, you know, it's easy to move a guy from you know, what is essentially a reserve team. So we'll see how it works. But I thought it was interesting the first game. Obviously, you would have liked to see this team get a win. But as we wrote about this past week, that's really not what they're in it for. You know, this is a developmental team that they're focused on the developmental side of it. And, you know, there's going to be guys in and out of the lineup, crew players coming back from injury that aren't getting minutes with the first team. They'll drop down from time to time. So there's not going to be a ton of continuity with this group. And the focus isn't on necessarily winning the MLS Next Pro, whatever trophy there is at the end of that. I'm not even sure.
You say that now, but if they go on a run, historic crew stadium's going to be packed.
Interesting.
Don't give us a reason to, you know, tailgate or anything like that.
I was
like
talking to some guys in the Nordic, and apparently they asked the Nordic, like, well, where do you guys want to sit for those games? Like, we were thinking the 50-yard line on the, you know, what was the bench side.
Yeah.
And they were like, we want to sit in the Nordic. And apparently the issues were like, well, we have to then staff that. It's like, well, just put everyone in the, you know. And so it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening. I think there's still a couple weeks before they play their first home game. And then obviously they'll play one game at lower.com field. But, that's our Crew 2 talk for this week's podcast. Let's move on to this week. Neil, the big story that kind of came out after the game against the Red Bulls since you last played is Zellerayan and the injury that looked bad on the field. Obviously, we talked about it last week. This was before we got the news, but 1 to 2 weeks is what Caleb Porter updated. Best case scenario when, you know, you're calling that game, you see him go down twice with the knee issue and then to find out he may not even miss a game depending on, you know, how the recovery was over the international break.
Yeah, for sure. Look, he's probably playing some of his best soccer since he's been here, and to not have him for any amount of time is tough. But if it's a week or two, I think they can manage, they can get by, especially if you're coming back, you're playing at home. Looking at the contact from Aaron Long on that challenge, I didn't necessarily think he got him around the knee. It was more of how he turned, so I was optimistic because he tried to come back on, and then, you know, the scan or whatever shows what everyone, I think, was hoping for. So they need to show now, if he's not able to play against Nashville, whoever's going to come in and step into that role or how they can be productive. Because he ended up with 79 chances created last year, sixth most in the league. I mean, you're still looking at a dearth. If he's not playing there, is it going to be Matan? Is it going to be some combination of, you know, rotating someone inside? Needless to say, the success when he's off the field is not the same as when he's on. I don't think anyone who's watched the team the last 3 years is going to be surprised by that. So you manage, though, because you're still four games into the season and you don't want it to turn into something like 2020 when he had a few nagging injuries and ended up missing seven or eight games.
Well, and Caleb Porter talked before the season about they wanted to have formations where if Zellerayan misses time, if he's away with the national team, if they need to rotate in a midweek game where they don't have to just try and plug someone, especially with Pedro Santos now being basically the only left back on the team with any experience. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he can't go Saturday, and obviously we all hope he can, if that formation does change, if they stick with the same 4-2-3-1. You know, I think they've got a number of options. I want you guys to weigh in, just kind of how you think the crew can adjust. We've got an article on MassReport right now with some ideas, but what do you guys think? Grant, we'll start with you. Just how would you play it if you were Caleb Porter?
If I was Caleb, well, I would probably
just in this instance.
Yeah, okay, all right, so I'm limited there. I would probably try to go with that 4-3-3 that we saw briefly in preseason. You know, I try not to get too hung up on just, like, positions, and we've seen that earlier this year that, you know, just because Lucas is playing at the 10, maybe he does, like, go out wide a lot, but I just don't think there's anyone you can plug in into the standard 4-2-3-1 and expect the same type of production or kind of game flow. So I would like to see something a little different just from Caleb, just to kind of mix it up, because we really haven't seen much difference in game day lineups and formations that much. So that's how I would play it. I'd like to see, and that's another way of also getting like Aiden Morse some more time, probably, right, if you need three guys in the midfield. And a team like Nashville, who's, you know, good, got a lot of talent, not off to the hottest start, you're at home. I think if you're going to tinker, if you're going to experiment, Saturday would be the time to do it.
Well, and honestly, Zellerion has an expected goals right now of 1, and he has like 4 goals. So the reason, like, one of the big contributing factors for that is because he's taking shots outside of the box, like that goal against Toronto, which is like a low percentage shot that, because of his skill, he can make go in. So if his presence is missing from that point of view, I think you're really right. When that, like, 4-3-3, if you have one holding midfielder and then you push up, like, 2 8s to play high, I think if you can, like, establish a presence in that particular zone of the field because he's not going to be there, then you have a better chance at replicating that. But, like, he has been, I won't say carrying the team right now, but he's playing out of his skin, and, like, I think that especially against Nashville, they need to get numbers into the front side of the field to make up for that.
Yeah, and I think you did see, and Caleb, you can give your thought, but I think the positive, at least I thought so, was, you know, they scored that goal against Red Bulls, 10 men, Higuain not on the – or, sorry, we'll get to Higuain.
Hey.
Zellerion not on the
He's
field.
He's in the air.
Yeah, he is.
40 and slip.
But, you know, you create that chance that leads to the equalizer with no Zellerion, and honestly, that was probably the worst of his games yet this season. He just, you know, wasn't as involved. Caleb, what do you think? How would you go about it?
You know, I think you got two options here. I think you go with that 4-3-3 and you either drop Matan or you put Etienne in there in the attacking mid-roll. Or you can go a little bit more radical. You could play 4-4-2, and I'd put Barry and Zardes up top. But I'd tell Barry, I'd say, hey, drop into that midfield role, almost like a false nine. Draw that defender with you, because the one thing that's really impressed me about him so far this season has been his passing. I mean, that first game that I saw him play, it was almost as if, you know, he's playing FIFA and he had the monitor where he knew where everybody was. I mean, he had eyes in the back of his head. So I'd say, you know, drop him into midfield, draw that defender with him, and send those wingers up higher, and then, you know, try to find him on the break. That's what I would do.
Yeah, there's also the possibility you stick with the 4-2-3-1. Nagby could move up to the 10. We've seen that in the past.
That's what we'll see. I mean, probably. Let's not get our hopes up.
Yeah,
folks.
I mean, it definitely,
it's going to be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well.
Well, I think more to the structure of how they've played, not defending set pieces, but in open play and how they've defended, which has been pretty good. So I don't think they want to break that model too much, especially against the Nashville team that's most likely going to create their chances in transition with the wing backs. They're another team that can rely on three center backs, and whether it's Mukhtar or Leal, they've played well together, and they had Teal Bunbury up top last game. So they are maybe the threat to possess and build up. I don't think any of the opponents that they've faced so far have had that characteristic or trend to them, and so that's why I think they'll stay more with that structure. We saw Matan play the 10, I think, in the Charlotte preseason game, and they did show the 4-3-3, which is a very good point. The comfortability level, though, without Lucas, if they have to do that, with, I don't know if they trust especially their attack without him in a situation like that where it's still kind of foreign and he's not out on the field.
Yeah.
Well, and you could also be without Miloš Deganek, name I'm still working on pronouncing.
That's good.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's a compliment. You know, he's coming back from Australia and international duty, and we'll get to the guys and what they did on national duty in a minute. But, you know, if you have to make changes because of that too, you know, the travel and whatnot, you know, it'll just be interesting to see what Caleb Porter elects to go with. You hope Zellerion's out there. I think that's obviously the key to the crew attack. And if he's not, then, you know, you got to make do. But fortunately, it's not a longer injury, as we said at the beginning.
It's important to remember, too, I think the next four games are going to be much more difficult than the previous four. Not that they haven't had their moments of playing well or putting points on the board, but let's be honest, Vancouver got ran off the field. Didn't look like anything that they were in the back half of last season. Toronto's still putting it together. They're going to be a completely different team come the summer. And then you've got these chaotic games with San Jose and the Red Bulls. And now you're getting teams in the upper crust of each conference, Nashville, even though they were in the East. And then you got Philly, Orlando, followed by a road trip to Kansas City, which won't be easy. So those next four are going to be, I think, infinitely more difficult than these most recent four that they've seen. So it's important to not push him back if you know you can get him back for three games as opposed to having him miss three and only playing one.
Well, in Nashville, I mean, it hasn't been the start they wanted.
No, and it's never easy when you have to play your first seven or eight games on the road, right? They're not opening their new stadium until next month.
It's nice to have a stadium you can use for the first part of the season. I think every team should just do that, just have a second stadium.
Why does no one have two stadiums? It's not that hard.
But
Nissan Stadium didn't get four games like historic Crusade.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah.
They could have done something like that. But you look at their schedule. They did beat Seattle to start the season, but tie against Minnesota, lost to Dallas, lost to Salt Lake in the last two. So, but we know this is a team. You know, I mean, Caleb Porter cited them multiple times in the preseason, talking about how he wanted this crew team to be a difficult team to beat, and he referenced how, you know, Nashville had a ton of draws last year, but Nashville's in the playoffs. The crew weren't. This team may not have found itself yet while on the road, but I think you're right, Neil. I think this will be a bigger challenge. I have not watched them this year. Have you guys seen them, and kind of what do you take away from them so far this season?
In spurts, I've watched a little bit with my ESPN Plus subscription. Very standard. I mean, like, their back line's strong. I mean, to get a goal against them, I mean, you got to earn every bit of it. I just don't think that transition fluidity is there in the same way it was last year, where they're just on rhythm. And like we saw that last year where the crew go up a goal and they don't miss a beat. I mean, Mokhtar's there and it's a tie. They seem to kind of lack that bite just from the couple games I've watched them. I watched them lose to Dallas and I watched them last week. But I mean, they're a dangerous team and they got talent. And I mean, even if Lucas is on the squad, it's not a game you're taking lightly by any means, even though it's at home. And if he's not, then it'll be interesting. It's going to be a new challenge, kind of like Neil said. Like, you know, we're going to kind of see a different tier of opponent here coming up.
Well, something to think about, too, is that, you know, Walker Zimmerman is on national team duty right now. He might play on Wednesday. And if he plays on Wednesday, he might be rested on Saturday. Or if he does play, he might not be, you know, at full health. So that's really big. Last game, they dropped into a back five with wingbacks. And then they sat two holding midfielders in front. So that central block, that's three center backs and the two holding midfielders in front of them, is going to be really hard to get through. That's why I, like, tug at my collar a little bit, because Zellerion is so good at unlocking defenses with his ball retention skills and his passing. So Zimmerman played in the middle of the back three. If he doesn't play, or if he only gets a limited amount of time, I think it gets a little bit more optimistic for them. But that's something to keep an eye on, too.
Yeah, that's a good point with Zimmerman. Just, you know, it's a lot of games if he's playing again.
It was three times in a week, right?
And you could do it. I mean, guys certainly have. But, you know, also the travel with the national team. Had to go down to Mexico, then to Orlando, now to Costa Rica. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see that, how that plays out.
It's a game that I think could look very similar to the one if you were at the game in July, which was the third game at Lower.com Field and ended 0-0, but pounded him in the second half. Molino had that chance late in the game. and Nashville's going to be happy to be content, come in, defend well. They were without some guys because of health and safety protocol. They're without McCarty, but Sean Davis is he's a guy that can step in right there and be just fine in the midfield. Jelani Baba started that game for Nashville along the back line, and they'll pitch a shutout, and they had 13, a league best last year, so they're comfortable doing that. That's Gary Smith ball. They've got veterans, savvy veterans. You know, does Godoy play too, coming back off of international duty with Panama, and he played his best soccer at the tail end of last season. So there's a group that knows its way to not be sexy, but be effective. And I expect to see whoever he throws out there try and bring that home for them come Saturday.
Yeah, and I think if you're the crew, you know, we're talking about what you do with if Zellerion is out. I assume you keep Nashville guessing this whole week. I don't imagine we'll get an update that Zellerion is going to play for sure. You know, Caleb Porter has never shied away from mind games. So, you know, Gary Smith is also having to prepare for, you know, different formations, different guys. You mentioned the two up top. You know, could that be a thing? So I think that could help the crew a little bit. But as you said, Neil, I think the defensive approach from them, you know what you're doing defensively against any look, any formation. Another exciting thing that will happen on Saturday, Federico Higuain signing his one-day contract to retire as a crew player, which a very American thing to do, but I'm glad they're doing it with him. You know, obviously, he's a guy who was, you know, Zellerion before Zellerion in terms of the role he played in crew success for so many years. Neil, you called probably every game of his black and gold career. Any memories that jump out in particular when you think back on what Higuain meant to this team and what he did here?
No, the first game rings a bell, too, when he came on as a substitute against Houston. That was 2012. And they were down 2-0 at the half in that game, and they ended up tying. Set up Eddie Gavin. I remember thinking, I think they found their next bell cow. Boy, did he turn out to be something special. You always wish that they would have got over the hump in 2015 and won the trophy for him. And I hate the fact that his crew career ended because of a torn ACL, and age and the circumstances didn't add up to making hay for another year, and rightly so, and you get Zellerion out of it. But it was just, as much as last, I'm kind of jumping away from what you were asking in terms of stories, but every time you watched him play, and just every person I would talk to, whether it be a casual observer in the stands or meet up with some friends home or away, and they'd be like, number 10, he controlled the game, you know, and all the little things that he did off the ball and his running, which made him special. And if you look at the characteristics of all three of the Argentine DPs, they've all got a different profile and makeup.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We did this after their first 50 games, where Scalotto had 30 assists after his first 50 games, and then Higuain had a balance of goals and assists. Zellerion's got more goals, obviously, than assists, but that fits their profile, right? And how they've displayed, how they've played through their course of their tenure. But the Miami game last year, where great reception for him. It was just odd, though, to see him in a Miami jersey in D.C. before that, like Namath with the Rams or Jordan with the Wizards. Like, this is one of the crew's own who became an iconic player, and I think the pomp and circumstance is well-deserved, and he gets to do it in the colors that he made his name in, at least in this league.
Caleb, do you remember Higuain?
You know, funny you mentioned that, because I was actually going to talk about that. So he got signed in 2012, am I correct about that? Well, I was 8 in 2012.
Do the math.
Not trying to make you guys feel old, but...
Too late.
I remember I went to a game with my dad, and, you know, they announced his name, and I just watched, you know, 2 years ago, the 2010 World Cup, and I didn't remember much, but I remember that Argentina team. I was like, oh, we got that striker from Argentina. I said, we got Higuain. He's like, no, we did not get that Higuain. He said, it's his brother, but, you know, pretty close. I remember, I mean, Higuain is my whole, like, crew life. Sure. When I started, he was playing. And I don't remember Scalotto. I'm not old enough to remember that. But Higuain was a big part of, like, I went to games just to watch him, man. It was magic every time he touched the ball. And, you know, you said that he signed a one-day contract, you know, for Saturday. Let him suit up. I mean, shoot. I mean, what do you have to lose? You know, if you don't want Matan sliding in or something else, you know, give him the 10 for a game and have him slide in.
Yeah, that, if only if it was legal.
Yeah, right. Well, that
he did jog my memory, though. There was a social media tweet at the time when they had signed him. Reporter will remain nameless, but you could probably steer true to who it might actually be. They go, at least they got the good Scalotto brother, you know. And it's fun. Now, granted, you're comparing a European career to a guy who had been a drifter throughout Argentina and Mexico, but sensational player. And now it's funny to actually watch his brother in the tail end of Miami struggles, who's acting more of like Pipa in his heyday, yeah, because of, they have no number 10 and they've stripped their roster to the bark. But that was funny to now look back on a 55 goal, third time all time leading scorer, and first in assists, and what he turned out to be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned the other two Argentines. Scalotto won an MLS Cup, obviously Zelarayán has. People came close. I mean, obviously the game against Portland. Mm. You know, will forever
run in 2017.
Yeah, so, yeah. So yeah,
that's the second leg that, they, looking back on it, they right, probably
had every
won
shot.
That game at
had every
absolutely
shot.
Yeah, and you know, just I think that's the one thing. You know, we talked last week about the circle of honor and what you have to get into that. I think those rules are silly, but you know, that's the one thing kind of missing from his resume is, you know, aside from an Eastern Conference trophy, he didn't have that. And not to take anything away from him, the player, but it's just unfortunate that as good as he was for the Crew, when you look at these guys and compare these guys, they don't all have equal, you know, kind of accomplishments that you can put in. But you know, back to the memories, because I think that's the fun part about talking about Higuain. Either of you have anyone that stands out in particular?
Oh, I remember actually it was my first Crew game in person. I moved to Columbus in 2018, and my first Crew game was the first leg of the playoff series against the Red Bulls, and he got the back heel assist to Zardes to score in that game, and
he came on at halftime of that game.
Yeah, yeah,
because they were resting him because of they had just played that 120 minutes against DC.
Yep,
in the
yep
wild card. Yeah,
and that was incredible. So yeah, that was the moment. That ended up being like one of the last times I saw him, first and last time I ever saw him play. But yeah, that is a special moment for me.
Grant, I could talk about Higuain for an hour.
Well, we don't have that much
time. No, understood. I think it was, you can go a lot of different directions onto this. Neil kind of mentioned that intro to when he came on. And I tweeted about this, you know, the stretch run of like 2011 to when he came in the summer of 12 was a little bit of a rough batch in like Crew success and fandom. And he was just a shot of adrenaline for this team. And if you spoke with people around the organization, he was very directive. You know, this is how you have to train. This is how you have to prepare. You got to, like, you know, do these things to be a champion. And he was here from 12 to 19. If you think about just the quality of the league and how that changed, and he saw, you know, roster changes that increased the skill level. He saw this team become a cup contender, was through all the drama of Save the Crew. I mean, he really did go through so much, and so many times he was trying just to will this team over that. And we talked about 18, where, you know, that game against DC, he gets that header and just forces it, and he's doing everything he can in the midfield, and it just, that it's kind of a tragedy. I mean, you just kind of run out of steam. He's one other signing next to him at 15 from winning. He's just a couple, you know, Jossie's here in 17. Do we beat Toronto? Like, there's so many just what ifs in his career. You know, just keep me up at night personally, because that's all I think about.
Talk about like, yeah, the profile of player that he represents. He's like part of a class that is now ending, which is like Diego Valeri, Ignacio Piatti, players in this league who like sum up that period of MLS
and helped raise the profile.
Iconic. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, these are guys who came to this league in their prime and like established that as a profile player who could sign here. I don't think you have, you know, the Zelarayáns without the Higuaíns. And so from that point of view, I mean, he's just as important.
It's very well said.
Yeah, and I think to your point, like, we talk about, you know, he didn't have Jossie in 17, but how many strikers did he elevate, due to his play, right? You think about
Aaron Schoenfeld.
Yeah.
Adam John.
We had both Kamaras. I mean, we had Kai, and then we had Ola, and then we shipped Ola off to L.A., but then Jossie came, and, I mean, he just revitalized so many strikers just due to his play, and I think that's the force multiplier factor that, you know, every great player in every sport has to have. Like, you make people around you better.
Well, the Jairo Arrieta partnership early on. And you brought up a very interesting point in 2012. He was more of an assassin in those first couple of games.
Right.
Free kick goals against the Revolution. He scored goals when they needed him to score. And then his intelligence obviously made the bedrock of his career and how he could manage a game throughout. But you brought up Valeri, and it's a great point. There's only seven players in the history of the league, that have a player for one team that's had 50 goals and 50 assists. Valeri, Kobe Jones, Preki, Higuain's a part of that group, and Landon Donovan, obviously, with the Galaxy, and I'll remember the other two when we sign off. But needless to say, you get the point and how much he's revered, I think, in the crew community, and championship or not, people will always remember the way he played very fondly.
Sure. Well, and Neil, you can attest to this, and I don't know how many of the other guys have met him, but, you know, getting to know him as he learned English and covering the team and whatnot, just an awesome deal. I mean, he was always great. He didn't always like to do interviews, especially because of the language barrier, but he did them. And, you know, I mean, I remember after the Kai Kamara incident, you know, they brought him out, and he reluctantly talked about what happened a little bit, and, you know, but just talking to him as he walked off the field, he knew more about soccer than most people at crew practice, and that includes some of the coaching staff and things like that. I mean, he was just an abundance of knowledge, a really interesting guy off, you know, outside of soccer, was a big reader, loved his cigars, you know. I mean, just like a
rock
really interesting, really interesting
big Stones
dude.
Fan, AC/DC.
Yeah, his son,
the good stuff.
His son, I believe, was playing American football when he was here in Columbus, as well as soccer. So, you know, just interesting guy. It was really cool to get to know him. You know, from the coverage standpoint, Neil, I'm sure
that's
you can
a great point. Yeah, when he got up to speed on his English, just the off the record conversations we would have at Obetz. There was a period before the injury that derailed his career, but he was just sitting out there and we were talking, and it was unlike any conversation I'd had with any member of the organization before. And I'm not saying that because of what he accomplished. It was a matter of fact in learning all this stuff that you wouldn't view it as normally from your perspective, or from even somebody that you had had multiple conversations with in the past. Just the way he thought the game, the way he thought about life, I think made it even more intriguing and fascinating every time you were sitting around him.
And even before he learned English, you know, talking to other guys who spoke Spanish about talking to him, Alex, now in Seattle, PR.
Caulfield?
Yeah, Caulfield. Yeah. I remember talking to him one day, and he was just like, you know, I wish he spoke more English or you guys spoke Spanish, because the things he says, you know, hearing him on the field even, you know, yelling at guys in Spanish and stuff, just, it's a different level. And, you know, I remember Hector Jimenez telling me about, you know, stories about the way he interacted with guys when Hector first got here and things like that. Hector obviously spoke fluent Spanish. Probably still does, I imagine. But,
It's not a coincidence he's going into coaching, you know. Like, I would have loved for him to stick around here. I get why he's in Miami and going that stage in his career, but I mean, he's going to be around soccer and MLS for a long time, I imagine. So,
yeah. Well, transitioning away from Higuain, while there was no crew game this past weekend, the U.S. men's national team had two big games in the last week. And I know we don't do a lot of national team stuff and there's no crew players there, but this team's on the cusp of qualifying for the World Cup, so it seems like a good time to discuss it. And obviously there's the Greg Berhalter factor, which always kind of connects that team back to the crew. Hopefully, given the result in Mexico, the 0-0 draw, where they probably should have won given the chances the Americans created, and then the win on Sunday night, it was 5-1 was the final score, against Panama.
Shellacking.
I mean, hopefully people have started to lay off Berhalter a little bit.
Impossible.
No shot.
Yeah. But, you know, this, I think not making the World Cup this last that last cycle, you know, American fans aren't taking this for granted anymore. And, you know, coming into this last three-game stretch, there was a chance, if things didn't go well, that the U.S. wasn't going to make it. Now all they need to do is, I think, not lose by nine to Costa Rica. Or is it five?
Five. It's, okay. Like, it's a number. I mean, I'm not popping the champagne yet.
Unlike them, which...
Not holding yeah. the qualified banner yet, is that?
Well, yeah, I think yeah. Pulisic kind of saw that and pulled it off. But that, I cringed when I saw that. I was like, oh, my God, we're tempting the fates here. Yeah.
Maybe that was just a misunderstanding in terms of what it took to qualify.
Someone forgot to carry the one. It was like, wait a second, hold on, guys. It's not locked in yet.
Yeah, but, I mean, this, you know, this is a big deal. You know, I bring up the Greg thing because, obviously, a young coach, he did it as a player, but going through this as a first-time national team head coach to guide this young team. Let's remember, this is the youngest team in that qualifying group, this final group of qualifying. You know, I mean, some of these guys were Caleb's age or younger when the U.S. last World Cup cycle. Some of the guys are still currently younger than Caleb. So, you know, it's pretty cool to see that this team is getting close. Anytime you can get a result in Mexico, I think is great, and you know I would have liked to see them put a goal in there and get out with a win. I think I said last week on the podcast that I thought they would, just because everyone's been so anti-Greg, he would go in and get that done. But yeah, I mean, for your guys' perspective, just you know, to have a World Cup, yes, it's in November, yes, it's in Qatar. There's a lot to talk about there, but to be back, what's the excitement level? Assuming they get the job done, you know, on was it Wednesday night?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's they can't lose if they concede six or more.
Okay.
Six or more.
I did see if they forfeit.
That's a whole other thing. Shout out
Is
Matt Doyle
real?
For putting that
that's
into the stratosphere.
Would they do it though?
No. But no.
Costa Rica has 13 goals the entire cycle, like the whole round. They don't want the ball. Anyways,
Well, I mean, this was definitely the most. On paper, the most difficult window for the U.S. in this cycle, I think. Like you already said, all the results. But, you know, so I was really apprehensive going into it because everything since 2017 has been just, like, bitterness and, like, negativity. I mean, like, every roster that comes out, there's an inquisition, and every time they drop points, it's apocalyptic. So, you know, honestly, I think they performed really, really well in this window, and... They went to Mexico and got a result, and you're right, they should have won. But, you know, they went to Panama. That was a must-win game. Panama was not eliminated. Panama had a lot to play for. If they win that game, they're in contention. And, they beat them 5-1. So I think they showed some real character. You talked about Greg Berhalter. He said himself, I think, in one of his most recent press conferences, that when he first came in, he was focusing on trying to impress upon the team a certain set of tactics. And he had to take a step back from that because you don't have the time with these players. And it's more about you have to win. And I think to his credit, he's done that. He's changed as a coach. And in games like this, you have to kind of put away that intellectual side of the game. And it's almost more about emotion. And those old, like, high school basketball cliches become true. It's about, like, grit and determination. That sounds like – it sounds cliche, but it's literally the emotional edge and the drive and effort is what puts you over the edge in this situation. And this group has really come together, I think. It's really impressive, I think. I don't think we should be just sort of taking it for granted or sweeping under the rug. You know, I think that they deserve to be celebrated, honestly. They're doing well.
I remember talking after I did an interview with Greg. This was probably right around COVID, the start of COVID lockdown stuff. And we were talking afterwards on the phone, and you know, he said they were sending guys videos on like how they wanted them to play and right. things like that. And just, you know, you're right, they don't have the day-to-day structure that he had in Columbus. And if you remember, you know, it often took several matches before the crew really got going. It was always, you know, early summer when things, and it takes time to learn that system. And you know, I think you're right, Theo, that you know, to his credit, he has adjusted to some degree. Now he's also working with more talented players, and yes, they're younger, but you know, it's like if he had this type of budget that the crew have now, you know, from an MLS level,
what could have been?
Yeah, but you know, I don't think you can complain with what Caleb Porter did in 2 years ago. I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle this last game, the Mexico game. They went for it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people expected a B team, myself included, to kind of go out there and just maybe sit back and whatnot. But they went for a win, and that could have cost them last night. I think the early goal helps kind of get things going. But credit to them for fighting in these two games instead of just trying to get the necessary results to get through.
And missing McKinney, Dest, and Aronson too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that shouldn't.
It was huge.
That's got to that's got to factor into it. They kind of brought in some new guys and got a result.
Shout out Shaq Moore flying in like the day of.
He looked great too.
He played really
well. He really did. It's interesting. I think you mentioned a lot of those cliches. Those cliches carried us through the 90s. I mean, we shouldn't we got to take into consideration there was a. Talking points about that is like this American spirit around this team, and it's all that kind of nonsense, but it is like you see some edge from some of these guys. We saw that at Mexico and yesterday, Kristen's not afraid to mix it up.
I kind of like
to see that. I don't know, maybe that's dumb meatball thing by me, but there's something to that, and that comes from Greg, I do think. So.
Yeah, well, it runs into the roots. I mean, where'd that guy make his.
It's from Jersey.
Yeah, but not only that, where did he shine on the international stage with Bruce Arena and that group that carved out results, and it wasn't always the prettiest, and the run they made in 2002, and really starting with that entire generation. The beauty of a young team that's as talented as this one, regardless of the inconsistencies and the frustration of sometimes not maybe playing up to what their level could be, is that when they do find it and do click, then it's going to be something to behold. And does that come 6-7 months down the road when they're playing in Qatar at the World Cup? And now
when they will be able to practice. I mean, they'll have plenty of time.
Look, if something odd occurs on Wednesday, like I'll
burn the tapes,
go in swim trunks and walk from my place to Obetz. it's not going to happen.
It's a decent walk.
Yeah, they're going to be in, but. Point being is, I think one of Greg's greatest strengths, especially here, was not just as a tactician and what he was able to put into practice, but now I think going back to the mental side and how he managed the team in 2017 amongst all the uncertainty in 2018 and instilling that belief and being able to do that here on the club level, and also now he can carry that. I think we've seen that in spurts now with the national team. It's starting to take hold and grow some roots. Down a few players, up against certain situations, and to just go out and get whatever result you need at all costs. And going back to the Mexico game, look, they were unbeaten in four games this year against them. So hell of a performance, I think, when you look at what the type of year that they had. And now it sets up well for them to make it official on Wednesday.
Yeah, and you make a good point, with the youth of this team, just This is not their run. If things had worked out differently and they'd made the World Cup last time, you'd probably have some more of those veterans still involved.
We're just getting started.
Yeah, and so I think it's exciting that this looks like they'll probably finish second in the group, which doesn't
take that every day.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a difference as long as you get in. But from here on out, it's just about results, and they found a way to do that. And you had to get in. Once you get in, it's about seeing what happens at the World Cup, and We'll see what happens there.
Draws Friday too,
yeah,
so we're. I mean, it's gonna. If everything goes well, we're gonna kind of get a picture of this. And to your point, where you said, "Are you guys excited for the World Cup?" I'll get excited come the fall when it's on the doorstep, certainly.
Yeah.
But can't take these for granted now.
I think just you think about the World Cup and you think about the one in 2014. Like the World Cup is just so massive because here in America, we got football, we got baseball, we got. Basketball, we got all these sports that take up a lot of the limelight that soccer doesn't. I've talked to people who are not soccer fans. They're like, oh, yeah, but I'll watch the World Cup.
Sure.
Like, I get pumped and I party when the U.S. is playing in the World Cup. And so I think that, I'm just a little bit tired of the U.S. fans who, don't give Greg its due or his due because, he was hired to bring them to the World Cup. He's doing that job, and yeah, it might not be pretty sometimes, but it's what he was hired to do, and he's grinding out results. And I had one guy I saw, he commented on an Instagram post this weekend. He said, "Talent overcame Greg, and he's getting carried by it." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, the team is extremely talented beyond any of our belief that we would think compared to other teams of the past." But players don't go out and win games by themselves. You know, they need a good base. You know, they need good tactics. They need a good game plan. They need a good, you know, smart coach to, you know, point them in that right direction. So that's just my thing with the whole Greg ordeal. You know, I think he's doing a great job. I think he's done a great job. I think he was a good fit when he got hired. And, you know, I'm excited. Kind of sucks that the World Cup's in the winter, because that means I'll just have to, you know, watch it during college classes or whatever. Right. You know, how we watch March Madness now. But, you know, the World Cup is huge. And I think, you know, that achievement shouldn't be, you know, glossed over just because, you know, we're supposed to make it, I guess.
Yeah. And the, to that point about Greg, I mean, I think people weren't so aware of what he did in Columbus with a small budget, things like that. I mean, they crew weren't on TV a ton. I mean, people know that they went to the MLS Cup final and lost. But, you know, there's also non-MLS fans that are U.S. soccer fans that just aren't interested in MLS. Mm. And he wasn't a name that was big, and, you know, probably didn't help that his brother was involved at a level and whatnot. But, you know, in the way that this league has gone, and now the crew are more on that side with the Haslam ownership and whatnot, but under he who must not be named, his ownership, I think, you know, what Greg was able to accomplish in the playoffs 4 out of 5 years, making those runs, you know, I don't know how you can argue that talent has carried him anywhere. I mean, you know, and as you mentioned, Grant, the guys that are out right now that are key parts of this team throughout this whole cycle, yeah, it's a talented team, but coaching plays a part in it. Anyone else have anything?
I mean, to your point that coaching plays a part, before I came, you know, I did a little bit of research. I hopped on my MacBook. You know, got to break it out.
Oh, like it. We love it.
Greg, his record's 34-7-8 as U.S. manager, which is, I mean, that's a pretty good win percentage from my standpoint. They've scored 106 goals and conceded 31. And you talk about that record against Mexico, 3 wins, 1 tie. You know, 2 losses, you know, early on. But, I mean, his record speaks for himself. I mean, you score 106 goals and concede, you know, 31. I'd say that's pretty good coaching. But, you know, fans see, oh, you only win 1-0. You only win 2-1. I mean, yeah, it's gritty results. But, you know, a win's a win. It doesn't – you don't get extra points for – you know, scoring more goals, unless it is goal difference.
Right.
But,
well, and CONCACAF's gotten a lot better.
Right.
I mean, you know, Don Garberg got a lot of shtick last night for kind of taking credit for Canada on Twitter. But, I mean,
That was amazing.
It was funny. But MLS is, I mean, not just Canada, but a lot of these countries that have kind of risen their level. Players are playing in MLS now, and they didn't have a league with this structure before. So, you know, it's not as easy as it once was to just kind of walk through qualifying anymore in CONCACAF. But the U.S. was not the only national team that played, and the crew had a few guys that took the field internationally, and we'll just kind of run through this because I doubt you guys were checking out the Saudi Arabia or Japan match and things like that. But Degnik played 90 minutes, 2-0 loss to Japan. Yao Yeboah did not play in Ghana's 0-0 draw with Nigeria. And then Etienne played in a friendly against Guatemala. They lost 2-1. I couldn't find the minutes, so I'm not sure how long he played in that game, but he did play. So
I'd be interested to know what position he played in that. If he was in that 10 spot that we've kind of seen him play for Haiti a little bit. So we were talking about the Lucas thing. Like, I wouldn't put it past Caleb to throw him in that spot either with how good he's looked. But he was the one this weekend that I really wanted to see because he's been so hot for the crew. But, yeah, no, I thought that was just interesting.
Well, we'll end this with looking ahead to Nashville. We talked a little bit about them earlier, but, you know, we expect this to be a defensive game. You know, we'll see about Zellerayan, but, you know, crew a week off. Guys were able to rest up a little bit that weren't on international duty. Obviously, it's only 4 games into the season, but I think anytime you can get a break. Just kind of your guys' expectations for this game. You know, getting back into it. Obviously, this hot start for the crew, 2-0-2, one of the top teams in the league heading into this past weekend when they didn't play. You know, do you guys see the crew keeping it going, or do you think Nashville comes in and is able to kind of grind out a result that would be disappointing at home?
Nashville right now scored 3 goals in 4 games. They have 1.1 expected goals per 90 minutes. They're away from home, and their $6.8 million striker, Ake Loba, has played 40 minutes all season.
sounds like an FC Cincinnati thing.
I believe it or not, yeah. And so, I don't know. I see this as a 1-0 Crew win.
Grant?
I would expect them to win with what kind of the talent we've seen them and how good they've played. But I think Neil kind of made a good point. Nashville can definitely just kind of do their thing and walk out of here with a tie. I don't know. It's 6 p.m. kickoff, yep. So... Not
yeah, first night home game.
Yeah, not quite a night game. It's going to be kind of chilly. I'm kind of beating around the bush here talking about weather. I think they win, but I think you got to get the points now before the schedule gets really tough because you're going to go at Philly, so you want to keep pace with them. But I think the rest does the Crew well compared to Nashville.
Yeah, Nashville also off this week. Caleb?
Yeah. You know, you think about Nashville, their style – you know, they're fine shutting up defensively. And I think that, you know, that's okay for the Crew because, you know, we're a high possession team. You know, we like to have the ball. We like to move the ball. I think it'll be either a 1-1 or not 1-1. 1-0, it's going to be a 0-0 game. You know, it's going to be one of those gritty where, you know, Jossie's going to have to take his chance or his chance and a half. You know, he's going to have to put it in the back of the net. You know, in Nashville – slips up, which they rarely do, you gotta capitalize. So you gotta have just someone with a killer instinct to put that ball in the back of the net when you get that one or two opportunities to put it in.
Neil, you don't have to give a prediction, but just kind
of this, like, they've shown pieces of their home aggression in the two road games, but more importantly, turning around a deficit at home last time against Toronto, looking really comfortable against Vancouver, and now they've won 8 of 9 at LDC, which was a struggle, right? When they had come out, and the year was all over the place come midsummer last year, and dropped some games at home, dropped some points at home. I think they've found that extra edge playing on the home turf. I expect that to continue. What I'm more interested in seeing in terms of generating something, and I think they can beat this Nashville team, and I think it will be narrow and it will be close, but if Zellerion doesn't play, you know, now's the time for the forwards to rise up. You know, Jossie has struggled a bit coming off the bench, the misses against the Red Bulls. Do you have a short memory? Miguel Berry, if he starts again or if he does not, has one shot in his last two games, and he's got 3 touches inside the opponent's penalty area, and those are some pretty good center backs. So relying on the fullback play, Santos has been really good. Marrera's been really good. 5 assists in his last 8 games. So I expect the service to be there, but what's going to make the difference in terms of the edge of scoring that goal that may make a difference in a 1-0 game? But I expect them to be playing like they have been their most recent stretch of games at home.
Yeah, that, you know, that 5 in the back, 3 in the back, however you want to describe it, has caused the Crew problems in the past.
And they've been much better at it this year. They really have. And a lot of that has to do with the wing play, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. I think everyone continues to be interested in the Miguel Berry, Jossie, Zardes debate. You know, Caleb has shown he's rolling with these guys thus far, but he may have to make changes anyway. Is this the time when, you know, you do alter your lineup a little bit, maybe – like we talked about, both forwards, or, you know, put Jossie up there in place of Miguel? As Neil mentioned, it hasn't been the production that we saw, you know, at the end of last season from the young striker. So, yeah, certainly a lot of questions. You know, we'll certainly have more answers as we get through the week. Obviously, we're recording this on a Monday night, and they haven't, you know, we haven't talked to the team since last week. So it'll be interesting. The Eguain stuff, is that before the game?
Yes.
Are they doing the pre-match?
Or something on the plaza.
Okay.
If you're a season ticket member, you can kind of see him early, maybe get an autograph. His kids are doing, like, the ceremonial first kick, and then they're doing something with him at center field, I believe.
And if you aren't able to attend and you're watching the game at home, he'll be with us in the booth first 15 minutes or so of the second half.
Well, that's exciting.
And I believe he's doing interviews with the other media folk, which I no longer have to be a part of, at halftime. So we'll have, I assume, a story if Thomas does his job right. We'll have a story after the game on kind of his emotions and that. But Neil will have already asked him all the good questions. And
That'll be after, so it's your chance to really dig in.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then I'll make sure Thomas is ready to go then. All right. Well, we kind of went through everything for a non-game week. I think this was quite the show. nothing crazy to report. So, guys, thank you all for coming out. Neil, you've done this before. Obviously, you do it frequently, but I appreciate you guys all coming out and making your Massive Report podcast debuts.
It's a dream come true, Pat. I was not kidding when I said this.
Well, as I
fresh face is excelling, Pat. Yeah. You've groomed them well.
As I
this
said,
he's got great flow, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
That's Caleb. Caleb, our 12-year-old. Yeah, but no, seriously, thank you guys. I think you guys have done good stuff thus far writing, and now you've got your first Massive Report podcast in the book. So, thank everyone else out there for listening. We're here at Saucy Brew Works here in, what are we, Michigan in 3rd. We recommend
really
you come out.
I really only came to see Sammy.
Well, yeah, we know that. But, yeah, if you know, if you're bored on a Monday or you know, sometimes we record on Tuesday nights, this is where we are here in the little coffee shop. So if you're in the area, you can always come say hello, which is what you guys did today. So thanks again. Thanks, everybody. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff that helps us out, as Brian has made clear on other podcasts. And Brian will be back next week. He can hopefully you know, do a better job than I did. Sam, thank you for running things behind the scenes, and we'll talk to you guys after next week's game. Hopefully talk a win at home.